I'd like to reconvene the September 24th, 2019 meeting of the Marine Resources Commission. Next item on the agenda is item number 10, public hearing pertaining to 4 VAC 225210, pertaining to taking the striped bass. Mr. Aspinwall, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioner and Commission members. This is a public hearing to establish emergency amendments as a permanent part of regulation to Chapter 4 VAC 20-252-10. Pertaining to the taking of striped bass, to lower the recreational possession limit in the Chesapeake Bay area, establish a 36-inch total length recreational maximum size limit, and establish commercial gill net maximum mesh size requirements in the Chesapeake Bay and coastal areas. So for a background, November 2018, the benchmark stock assessment for striped bass was released. The results of that assessment indicate that this fishery is overfished, and what that means is that relates to the spawning stock biomass, or the amount of mature fish in the fishery being below a threshold level. And that overfishing is also occurring, which relates to the fishing mortality estimate being above the threshold relative to 2017, which is the last year in the assessment. So these results were provided to the ASMSC Striped Bass Management Board. They immediately took action through a rebuilding scheme, or Addendum 6. The plan development team indicates that at least an 18% reduction in coastwide removals will need to take place to bring the staff to the target within a year. So this figure in front of you looks at fishing mortality through the time series. That threshold, the dotted line is the threshold value. This is a value that we do not want to exceed. The latest assessment indicates that the coastwide stock has been fished at or above the threshold level for the last 15 years. And the 2017 estimate was 0.307, significantly above the threshold value, indicating that this fishery is overfishing. The other reference point is the spawning stock biomass. What we see is that biomass seems to peak around 2002, 2003. Since about 2010, we start to see a trickling down, a decline in the total biomass, where the biomass has been below this threshold for the last 5 years. The 2017 assessment is below the threshold value, which results in an overfished status. So the flow chart in front of you outlines the three approaches that the Striped Bass Management Board, ASMSC, will be faced with in October, October 30th. They will make a choice on the three different approaches, one being status quo, which is no change, which is always an option under ASMSC. Option two, which is an equal approach, where the recreational sector will make an 18% reduction, the commercial sector will make an 18% reduction. Or option three, which is where the recreational sector makes a 20% reduction and the commercial sector makes a 1.8% reduction. And from there are sub-options that would achieve that reduction. That approach will be made at the end of October, and following that action, we will have more of a request and a public hearing on what we'll be doing further with the quota. So turning the page, talk about the recent trends in Virginia's recreational striped bass fishery. The figure in front of you looks at the recreational effort in directed trips for striped bass and harvest from 2003 to 2018. The blue bars represent the directed trips for striped bass. The gray bars represent the harvest in terms of numbers of fish, and the orange dotted line represents the CPUE, or harvest per trip. And what we're seeing is really a decline in all three parts. We're seeing a decline in trips, we're seeing a decline in harvest, and more importantly, we're seeing a decline in CPUE, which is a little alarming because CPUE is often used as an index of abundance. And the 2018 estimate is noted as one of the lowest estimates that we've seen in Virginia, actually since the moratorium. The figure in front of you here looks at Virginia harvest relative to the total harvest of other states and what our ranking has been. And so Virginia has really been the leader in terms of harvest since 1990, you know. We've been number one, or at least the top three, to about 2004. Since then, We've hit about top five, and we dropped rank. It looks like we were number seven in 2014, and in 2018 we're number six. Talking about the commercial fishery, this table looks at the commercial landings in terms of numbers of fish and pounds in the Chesapeake Bay area. So the commercial fishery is a little different because it's managed through an ITQ system. What we see is that, you know, there are commercial watermen that utilize all their quota. There are some that underutilize their quota. And overall, for the Bay, on average in the last 10 years, about 86% of the quota has been achieved. And I think it's important to note that in 2015, you'll see a change in that quota. And that's a result of Addendum 4 in the Bay when the commercial sector had to make a 20.5% cut. For the coastal commercial fishery, what we see is that more of that quota seems to be utilized. On average, it's about 91%. Unlike the recreational fishery, we really don't see a trend up or down per se. It seems to stay relatively stable across years. So following results of the assessment being released indicating that this stock is overfished, that overfishing is occurring, staff is proposing to lower the possession limit from two fish to one fish in the Chesapeake Bay area. We will not be modifying this season, but overall, lowering the possession limit to one fish will result in a 24% reduction, which achieves both approaches that the ASMSG Striped Bass Board will have to decide on in October. In addition, staff is also proposing to implement a 36-inch recreational maximum size limit for the Chesapeake Bay fall, Potomac River tributary, summer, fall, and coastal seasons. And so the savings with a 36-inch maximum size limit is 0.22%, which appears minimum. However, this is an additional effort to protect the spawning stock. There are multiple studies that show that there's a linear relationship between length of females and the numbers of eggs that they produce. And not just abundance, but literature suggests that they're producing more eggs that are larger, that are more viable, and that have a higher survival rate, which is very important. And that the commissioner asked at last meeting, you know, what is the difference in fecundity, for example, between a 36-inch fish and, let's say, a 44-inch fish. A 44-inch fish, on average, has 41% higher fecundity than a 36-inch fish. So I think the take-home message here is that this measure savings may be minimal, but it's an additional effort to protect the spawning stock, and it's going to promote more recruitment in terms of eggs coming into the population. For the commercial fishery, we're proposing to implement a maximum mesh size requirement, 7 inches in the Bay, 9 inches on the coast. Currently, there are no maximum mesh size requirements in the Chesapeake Bay or coastal area in Virginia waters. Maryland PRC have a 7-inch maximum mesh. Again, this is to curb the harvest away from the spawning stock or those large breeding fish. We don't want to put a maximum size limit per se because we don't want to promote dead discards. We don't want to waste a resource. And so, in addition, quota adjustments will be considered again October 30th for next year. What that adjustment will be, we won't know until that meeting. We had a FinFish Management Advisory Committee meeting last week. We received feedback from FMAC and the public on the three issues that we're talking about today, the lowering the possession limit, the maximum size limit, and the gill net mesh size requirements. What staff did was take a poll from the audience first on these three issues. We started out with a one fish possession limit. We had 13 votes, 20% of the audience, which was a total of 65 people in attendance, were in support of this. We did not have any support for the maximum size limit. We did not have any support for the gillnet mesh restrictions for this year. 9% were in favor of gillnet mesh restrictions for next year, and 80% overall were not in favor of gillnet mesh restrictions. And we were also asked by the public to take a poll on, keeping the charter fishery at two fish and the private sector being at one. Overall, 51% of the public were in favor of that. So FMAC did make a motion, which is a slight modification to staff's recommendation, which is to keep the one fish per person per day. However, they would not like to implement the 36-inch maximum size limit. The charter fishery would operate under the one fish possession limit during the spring and fall season up to October 31st. Starting on November 1st, they would operate under a two fish possession limit, one of those fish still being able to be 36 inches. They did not want a maximum mesh size for gill nets. They believe that this should be phased in at a later date, possibly next year. We also received a petition from a tackle shop with 126 signatures that were in support of FMAC's motion. So moving on to the regulation, staff does not have any additions or modifications to the regulation that we presented to commission last month. So on page 6 of your regulations, section 80, we'll be lowering the possession limit from two fish to one fish in the spring summer striped bass fishery. In section 90, also on page 6 of your regulation, we'll be implementing a 36-inch maximum size limit for the fall fishery. We'll also be lowering the possession limit from two to one fish per person. In section 100, in page 7 of regulation, we'll be modifying the language in subsection D. We'll be adding subsection E, which provides a maximum size limit of 36 inches from June 16th through December 31st, and we'll be lowering the possession limit from two fish to one fish. And for the coastal fishery, also on page 7 of your regulation, we'll be adding subsection D, which essentially provides a maximum size limit for the coast. So the minimum size limit would be 28 inches. The maximum size limit would be 36. Possession limit is already one per person, so we just wanted to leave that language there. On page 10 and 11 in your regulation, we'll be adding subsection A, which states that any registered commercial fisherman who is permitted to harvest striped bass from the coastal area in accordance with 4 BAC 20-252-130 and sets or fishes any gill net in the coastal area shall be prohibited from using gill net mesh size greater than 9 inches in stretch mesh. And subsection E, which states that any registered commercial fisherman who is permitted to harvest striped bass from the Chesapeake Bay area in accordance with 4 BAC 20-252-130 and sets or fishes any gill net in the Chesapeake Bay area shall be prohibited from using gill net greater than 7 inches in stretch mesh, with exceptions for restricted areas defined in 4 BAC 20-751. So staff has received a total of 22 written comments. They come from both the recreational fishery, private and charter fishermen, also fishing organizations. In summary, 82% support the emergency actions provided by staff. 18% oppose the emergency action. Staff recommends that the commission establish emergency amendments as permanent part of regulation to Chapter 4 BAC 20-252 pertaining to the taking of striped bass to lower the recreational possession limit in the Chesapeake Bay area, establish a 36-inch total length recreational maximum size limit, and establish commercial gill net maximum mesh size requirements in the Chesapeake Bay and coastal areas.
Any questions of Mr. Aspinwall by members of the commission? Thank you for getting that fecundity rate for me. I appreciate that. Mr. Zedrin.
Can you explain to us what biomass means?
Biomass is in terms of weight. Weight of, and are you talking about biomass of the spawning stock? It's weight of mature females in the population. So when they do a stock assessment, they do it in numbers and weight, but the weight is in terms of the reference point.
Yep. Mr. Tankard?
Was there any discussion about the idea of just not catching spring fish, both recreationally and commercially, if we're worried about their fecundity and their...
That action first started with the removal of our trophy season. That was primarily all large fish, 36 inches or greater. So that's where we started. But what we know from staff and what the data suggests is that a lot of these large fish are not just being caught in the spring, but a lot of them will be caught in the last two waves of the year, so November, specifically December. So lowering the possession limit in addition with the maximum size limit would curb the harvest away from those large fish.
Mm-hmm. Further questions? Ms. Everett?
Excuse me, I'm sorry if I missed this, but I know we're recommending action taken today to get ahead of the October 4th start date of the season. And then at the end of October, ASMFC will provide their recommendation. Will recommendations again be revisited, even though it's mid-season at here at VMRC? Or how does that kind of align with the ASMFC decision?
Right. So on October 30th, ASMFC will make a decision on which approach first to go with, 18% or the more proportional route. And then it will be up to staff to come up with a conservation equivalency proposal, whether to move forward with our recommendation here or to choose what's been provided in the addendum.
Further questions, Mr. Tankard?
One more question. So, I mean, it looks like the recreational fishery has declined much greater than has the commercial fishery. And do you know those percentages?
For the recreational fishery, I do. I know comparing 2018 to one of more peak years, let's say 2007 or 2008, 2018 is a 92% decrease in harvest. 93% decrease in harvest. And it's not just 2018. 2017 was also one of the lowest estimates we've seen since the moratorium. So there's overwhelming evidence to suggest that, that abundance is lower than we've seen historically.
Follow up, Mr. Tanker.
So I guess my question is, why is it then that if the recreational catch gone down so hard, but yet the commercial fishery not nearly as much, why are we asking for a similar reduction commercial recreation? It seems as though the fish
because
are being
this,
taken by the commercial.
Right. So this stock is a coast-wide stock. So that approach is what was outlined in that proportional, where you saw a higher reduction for the recreational, lower for the commercial, because what they're doing is they're comparing it to the reference year, the 2017 year. Coast-wide, not Virginia, coast-wide, 90% of those removals were from the recreational fishery, while 10% were from the commercial. And that's why that option is there, and that option will be decided on in October. Virginia is a little bit different. Virginia in 2018 is split more evenly, 50% commercial, 50% recreational. If you back up to 2017, it's more like 60% recreational, 40% commercial. So our state really is not the 90-10 split that you see coast-wide, but that option will be available for the board to pursue in October.
And Mr. Tanker, that's a good point, because those that wish to argue in a certain manner, in a certain fashion, will hang their hat on that 90-10 without the clarifier that comes up about what's really going on in the waters of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Mr. Zedrin?
How do the majority of the commercial catch caught? Is it by nets? Is it
gillnet.
By gillnets?
Primarily gillnets.
Further questions? Mr. Ballard?
Can you help me understand a little bit more the fecundity rate and the relationship to size of the fish?
So there have been multiple studies that look at fecundity, not just at age, but also at length. And what all those studies suggest is that as females get larger, that they produce more eggs. And so so last month we were asked to look at the difference, for example, between a 36-inch female and a 44-inch female. And on average, a 44-inch female produced 40% higher, more eggs than a 36-inch female. And so, having a maximum size limit in place would only promote more, protecting the spawning stock for one, but also bringing in more eggs into the fishery.
If I can ask a follow-up, it's not tabular in nature. In other words, it's exponential in nature, correct?
Correct.
Which means just because you have one that may be 40-inch with X, 42-inch, it's not necessarily the same amount. It's almost like the oyster. The larger the oyster, it's just more exponential. you know about them. So anyway, Mr. Tankard.
One more question, too. You know, when we throw back something greater than a 36-inch fish, what's the probability of that fish continuing on and
so
living and spawning?
So the hooking mortality estimate for striped bass is 9%. That was a study done by Diodati and Richards, I believe, in 1996. And what it did was look at a study for all the fish that were caught in saltwater using different hook preferences, different temperatures, different salinities, and overall the average was 9%. So if you were to catch a fish that was greater than 36 inch and release it, the assessment scientists would indicate that that fish has approximately a 9% chance of dying, essentially.
Further questions? Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, this excuse me. This is a public hearing. We will be using a timer. You will be afforded 3 minutes to provide your comments to the commission, and whoever wants to come first can come right on down. And I will tell you, don't think you'll be the last, and I'll cut the hearing off, and somebody's going to jump up. If you're going to be heard, please stand up to be heard and come on down. Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Hello, my name is Wes Blow, recreational fisherman. I support what this the thing that's proposed to us. Recreational fishing has been almost non-existent. You know, if you look at Rudy Inlet, you know, 10 years ago, it was full of boats in January and February. It just doesn't happen anymore. We used to go to the high-rise bridge and, you know, expect to catch, you know, fish every night, you know, from before Thanksgiving until the end of the year. It just doesn't happen anymore. So the fishery is a serious problem, and I support what's happening, what's proposed to happen. I am really concerned about the gill netting of large fish in the springtime. You know, that is unfathomable how that is even allowed to happen, you know. Whatever measures can be taken to stop large female fish from being gill netted in the springtime, I think should happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blow. Who's next? Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Quinnan. I'm an attorney with Thompson & McMullen in Richmond. And I normally practice in the area of energy law, so you'll have to forgive me. I'm trying to climb something of a learning curve here. But I represent the Twin Rivers Watermen's Association, commercial fishermen. And I just wanted to make a couple of quick points. Doug Jenkins, who is who I normally deal with, couldn't be here today. One is that I think we saw numbers that show that the commercial fishermen are doing a good job of staying within their quota. And staying within the quota is what the commercial fishermen need to do to help contribute to the revival of the stock of the population of the striped bass in the bay. The question, most immediate question that I have about the gill net restriction is timing, because the commercial fishermen have nets that comply with current regulations now, and they made investments in those nets for this season, for this year, and if the new rules go into effect immediately, it's effectively a taking of their nets. They're going to have to go out. I don't even know how quickly they can replace nets with nets that comply. And I haven't heard anyone address the issue of when the new regulations for the gill nets would go into effect, except that the FinFish committee, I know, I don't know. They recommended holding off on these regs until the Atlantic State Group takes action. And that makes a lot of sense, because the Atlantic States Group is going to be taking action very shortly. And what's proposed, what's in front of the Atlantic States Groups with regard to commercial fishermen is either going to be an 18% reduction in quota or a 1.8% reduction in quota. And that's a big difference. And what they do there may well affect what commercial fishermen can reasonably do about their net gill net sizes. So for purposes of the hearing today, I'm going to be working with the Waterman's group on preparing written comments for the Atlantic States group. They're due on October 7th. But for purposes of today, what we would really ask is that, well, prefer you to put off making a decision about gillnets until you see what the Atlantic States group does. If you won't put it off entirely, at least put in some reasonable timing so that the fishermen have a fair chance to deal with the equipment issue. So, thank you.
Thank you, Councilor. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
I'm John Satterley, representing the Virginia Saltwater Sport Fishing Association and the 600-plus members that we have. And we have our comments on the proposed establishment of the emergency amendment to lower the striped bass to the one fish per person per day and the 36-inch total length. We are conservation-minded and want to do our part in bringing the striped bass stock back to healthy levels. VSSA has spoken publicly about supporting this initiative. However, there is a divide among our members as to how this can be accomplished. Given this divide, we have provided the poll results, and I believe you received them, Commissioner?
Yes, sir.
And hope you'll take them into consideration when you make your decision. Also, we've had some anglers that have asked about the utilization of a tag system, which could be implemented to where they could keep one fish larger than 36 per year. And the tag would have to be purchased from the commission at, they suggested, a $50 price in advance of the time the fish had been taken. And we're cognizant of your time constraints on putting something like that in, but maybe it could be worded to where they could implement as soon as possible. And moreover, we are very deeply disappointed that other states aren't taking this as seriously as we are. I'm sure you look on the social media and you see that they're still throwing stripers in the coolers just up the bay from us, and they've been doing it all summer long. So I think that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On to your comments. Number one, we are working on the trophy. Did you, one of y'all want to come up just to real fast address that, just to give you a heads up? Because I heard someone else ask about it. Thank you for your comments, sir. He'll hit to the trophy tag for you.
What we're proposing is
just
a...
Pad gear for the record.
Pad gear, okay. What we're proposing is a bonus fishery where, as you said, there'll be a tag. You would purchase a tag. We haven't decided on a price yet, and the idea behind that was it wouldn't be like a trophy fishery where we had in the past where you'd be able to catch one large fish every time you fished. It would be one fish per year or two or whatever it happens to be. And we'd have allowances for charter captains as well. We could not get that up and running for this, you know, for this fall. I mean, it requires, if you figure there's 40,000, you know, registered boats plus anglers, and you know, if all those people want to get a tag, you can imagine what that would be involved. So we're planning on having that up and running probably sometime by the spring. And so that's what we're looking at, a bonus tag program.
Thank you. And to the point in reference to other states, as I said before, Virginia's always been a leader as far as conservation and matters are concerned. We would hope that by undertaking this action, there would be a trend set that the others would follow behind, realizing that's not necessarily going to be the case, but we believe that it's our responsibility to do what we're doing. So, who's next? Yes, sir. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Clinton Lessard from the Eastern Shore. We'll start off, I don't want to go into the commercial and recreational argument here, but as we know that our limit, we have a spring season, I believe, is April or May. It's a short recreational spring limit where we're allowed to fish. Commercial guys are allowed to fish and put their nets over, and they start a new quota, correct? And they can fish January 1st, put a net out, and they can have their quota. February, March, April, they can have it all. But we're worried about the pregnant females, okay? Our fishery, recreational and charter fishery on the Eastern Shore is mostly November 15th through the end of December. Okay, we don't catch Well, I mean, we can catch the smaller fish in the creeks, but we don't have the same two fish where the 36-inch max on the western shore. Over there, you know, I'm sure, and I don't know how they fish over there, but I'm sure they're happy with two 36-inch and under fish. On the shore, we don't catch those, okay? If we're worried about the breeder stock, you know, if the recreational guys can't fish, why can the commercial guys set nets and fish and fill their quota? Why can't we all fish on the same, you know, measure? Let's all have the same measurement there. Also, with the 36 max size limit, I just don't see for as many people that fish on the eastern shore, and you're going to set a 36-inch size maximum, and we're talking about dead fish. It's going to be hard to catch a fish with live bait on the shore, by boat, but fishing on the eastern shore, under 36 inches. And if you do, if you catch a 40-inch fish, okay, and you catch another 45-inch fish, and you catch a 50-inch fish, now those are three fish that are being thrown back. And I don't know what the mortality rate is on them, but I think it's 1 to 9, or every 10 fish, one fish is killed. It might be more, it might be less, I don't know. One other thing, the numbers. The gentleman proposed numbers that were from 1996, I believe, in reference to the studies for pregnant females. Do we have any more recent numbers on the age of fish along with, you know, their size limit and, excuse me, their size, like a 44-inch fish, does it have a 41% breeding rating? I don't know what that proper word is. Or does it decrease with age? You know, if the last studies have shown 20 years ago, do we have anything further that has a better number? And one last thing before I leave, I don't know where the numbers are coming from as far as the harvest and directed trips. You know, that number seems very, very off for a directed trip and a harvest calculation, where I've been to the dock numerous times and haven't had a soul checking who I was, what vessel, what I caught. I've seen it happen before, but you don't see it happen. So where do these numbers come from?
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I want to respond to that as far as the numbers, as far as the MRIP and that's concerned, because I think we want to provide them.
Sure. So the latest stock assessment did use estimates of discard mortality from Diodati and Richards. I said 1996. I may need to go back and look at that. I'm starting to feel like that was more of a recent study. There's a lot of studies that were considered into the stock assessment. This was the most robust assessment, essentially, to estimate discard mortality, and that's why it was chosen by the assessment scientist. In terms of MRIP, you know, that is a federal survey. Starting July of 2018 is when we had the new calibrated estimates that came in that were used. In fact, this was the first species to use those estimates in a stock assessment. So, you know, we're using the latest science that we have to make the best management decisions for the future of this species.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Bowden, you stand up.
Thank you, Mr. Bowman, members of the commission.
Good to have you.
I'm Ernest Patton. I'm president of the Eastern Shore Workmen and Watermen Association, and I made the motion at the Finfish Committee as somewhat of a compromise. I've been on the Finfish Committee for over 30 years. When you look at the emergency regulation, this is one problem. We actually know what the problem is. A lot of fishery stuff, we don't know what the problem is. This one is pure, simple fact. It is recreational discard mortality. The vast majority of it has nothing to do with Virginia. It's occurring in New England and likely also in the state of Maryland. With this measure on the recreational fishery, 36-inch maximum, you're looking at 0.22%, less than a quarter of a percent. I believe Mr. Gear told us it was 6,000 to 8,000 fish is what we'd be saving. That's usually what they kill in one day in discard mortality in Massachusetts. That's for the whole year for us, one day in Massachusetts. They probably kill over 10 million pounds every year from the spawning stock with discard mortality. So, you know, we need some fairness in this. All the reduction that you're talking about in that 24% is coming from the one fish. It's not coming from the 36 inches. why take an opportunity for recreational fishermen? You might have somebody young who's caught a fish of a lifetime, and they're going to have to throw it back. And you're really not gaining anything on 0.22%. It's going to be lost in the background mortality. Virginia's done a very good job at keeping mortality low, way better than almost any state. You know, we're looking at two different things. We have the perfect storm of information. We have the benchmarks changed. But now we are approaching the old benchmark, so we do have a problem. I'm not going to say we don't. We're cutting close to 0.31, which was the old one. But along with that, we changed the recreational fishing survey altogether. And it showed that for years we've been catching way more fish than we originally thought. So you have that figuring into it. You're having a stock that's been lowered the amount that you can take. You're having new information showing that you've been taking more. Which one's correct, I don't know, but like I said earlier, we're approaching 0.31, so we are approaching the old one. We know what the problem is. It's clear. It's recreational discard, most of it in New England, but now a lot in Maryland. Some of it's regulatory. Some of it's because hook and release fisheries. We need to address it. We needed to have at least a circle hook position in this, but we did. When you talk about the net size, you're having some unintended consequences. You know, when you look at Potomac River in Maryland, which is used for examples, that's a distinct fishery. All the fish are one group. When you're in Virginia, there's no rivers on the eastern shore. So the western shore really is more representative of Maryland would be because you have river systems. Eastern shore does not have them. So the eastern shore on the bay side more resembles the ocean side, because they don't have the availability of the small fish, so it's really different.
Mr. And
then on the net size restrictions, you also have other fisheries.
I need you to try to wrap it up. Your time is up.
Excuse me?
Your time is up.
Time is
if
up.
You wrap it up.
Okay. So in my eye, this is what I'm going to say in finishing. We don't need to do the 36 inches on the recreational side. The mesh size, you're not able to buy nets. We're under completely different restrictions. We had the Marine Mammal Protection Act that really affects people in my position in the ocean and in the lower part of Chesapeake Bay. We are not allowed to use nets less than 0.18 millimeter. The weapon is not available. So basically, you're closing the fishery down by doing it. The Fin Fish Committee has been very viable for 40 years. Something like it should be run through us. Let us work with staff, see if we can work out something and phase it in. I've never heard anything just like that before. Thank you.
Thank you, Ernie. I appreciate it. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Jerry Hughes. I'm a recreational fisherman from Chesapeake, Virginia. 4 years ago, I got lucky, and I caught a trophy striper off of Cape Charles. The last 4 years in a row, I have spent 8 to 10 trips a year between Thanksgiving and December 31st trying to duplicate that catch. Now, it meant a lot of trips to a lot of tackle shops. I spent a lot of money on the Bay Bridge Tunnel, on gasoline. Luckily, this year, on December 14th, I caught another one. Now, if I can't keep one, do you think I'm going to spend the next 4 years trying to catch another one by doing all of that? I don't think so. And my second thing is, show me where the state of Virginia has had any benefit from being a leader in trying to do something about this. The state of Virginia has never gotten anything from it, from AMFSC or anybody else. We're always the ones who try to set the example, but we don't get anything from it.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Who's next? Good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon. I think most of y'all know me. I'm Chris from Chris's Bait and Tackle. We're also the ones that gave you the petition. I hope you've received that so you can see that most of our fishermen have that same problem that everybody has spoke about, where we cannot find that small fish that everybody's talking about. Alex did refer to people not catching their limit of fish. And again, I'll base that on the fact that we do not keep a small fish as a general rule. On the Easter Shore, most of us are targeting these big fish. I also wanted to add that you talked about all the emails that were sent in for this. There's been quite a few Facebook posts from other states that are sending these emails in that are not even Virginia-licensed or saltwater-licensed people putting their two cents into our fishery. So I just wanted you to keep that in mind. The ones that are on our petition all have saltwater fishing licenses for this area. Obviously, in other states, you're seeing that they can keep the fish almost all year long. Our main striper season from my store is in those months. Most people are also in agreement of closing November 1st through December 31st, or November 15th if we have to, and doing a max size. Virginia has already done an emergency regulation. This will be the second emergency regulation that y'all are doing, and no other state has followed through on this. And we don't want the fishery to go away. Obviously, if we don't have fish to fish for, I don't have business either. I also wanted to comment on your figures for that study. I talked to Captain Jim Jenrette this morning about that. And the study that was done on the mortality of the fish was not done to the salinity and the cold temperatures that we have, and that it shows in that study not to use it, but just use it as a guide, and that it could be down as low as a 2%, I think it is, instead of this percentage that they're talking about. So please review that on that mortality rate study that was way back. I also have some suggestions on what we can do. And since we are in such a bad way, I would propose that you shut down the harvest of striped bass both to recreational fishermen and commercial fishermen during the spawning air. So that way we can let them spawn before we do any harvesting. I think that would be very important. I think when the striper season is closed, that we should not be allowed to target those fish in any way for catch and release to cut down on those mortality rates. And again, I said the max of 3 per boat. We should also incorporate another state has incorporated this no live culling regulation, similar to Massachusetts, where they said the discard obviously is dead legal or live legal fish. You shouldn't be doing that at all. If you bring that fish in the boat, that should be yours. I know it's hard to enforce, but we need to put some parameters up so that's not done. The practice of high grading, whereby legal size striped bass are released in favor of a larger fish caught, in is unlawful, and that is stated right in their regulations.
Chris, can you wind up for me, please?
Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
One other thing is that the restaurants do not have to have a buyer's license. Me, as a bait shop, I have to have a buyer's license to buy from the watermen, but none of these restaurants have this. And there's no numbers to come back on what was actually harvested and what they bought. So I would appreciate something being done fairly. If I got to be the bad guy, then we should all have some kind of tax.
Thank you, ma'am. Who's next?
Hey, my name's William Lewis. I'm from the Eastern Shore. I'm a retired commercial diver that worked in the fishery with pound net fishery for years. I also worked with marine fisheries to target some problems we had in the Chesapeake Bay with turtles and dolphins earlier. One of the problems I have with what you're looking at, about 8 years ago, we had a cold front come into the Eastern Shore, and that totally annihilated the fishery in October for striped bass. I mean, it completely left, obviously, because the temperature dropped 15 degrees. Since that time frame, we've seen a reduction every year in that fishery from migrating fish coming into the bay. Everybody looks and says that the fish that are in the bay are one fish, and the other fish in the ocean are separate. I find that hard to believe. I think the migrating fish that come down from other states and come in here in the fall, those numbers are not being looked at. And I think that fishery that we look forward to and have seen in past years, 10 years ago, we don't have now. But yet we're not addressing that in this meeting. And I think that's a big problem of what's going on. I also think that the taking, as others have said, in the springtime of spawning fish, you always mention spawning stock. I think this is a big problem, taking those fish in the springtime and not allowing those eggs to lay. As we all know, a 50 to 60 pound fish lays 1.5 million or more eggs per fish. When you take all those numbers of fish that are sold in that time frame, that's a lot of fish taken out of the fishery. I'm in favor, like Mr. Lessard said, of the fishery staying open. I realize we need regulations, but I think the mortality rate needs to be taken into effect. The fish that come into the bay, the people who come here, and the tourism that, that is brought into the Chesapeake Bay in the fall is insurmountable for everybody on the eastern shore and local fisheries, I'm sure, on the western shore, the tidewater area. To close this season down and not allow a fish, one fish, whether it's one fish per person, three per boat, or two per boat, to not allow something like that is going to be devastating to this industry in the recreational sector. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Lefford?
Good day, sir. Good to see you. Thank you, Commissioner Bowman, commissioners. I'm all over the place on this. No, I don't have much time. What I've got, about a minute?
3 minutes.
3 minutes. What's unfortunate is that when we get to a place like this is it causes the infighting that I see. It's the most discouraging thing when we get to these places. We've been here on Flounder. We're going to be back again on Flounder. Rockfish is no exception. I fully support a one fish per person recreationally, you know, over the 36. These folks deserve to fish. They deserve to have tournaments. I think the numbers show that Virginia has had a healthy fishery, both commercially and recreationally and charter, for 25 years. You know, we were front runners in the moratorium and the front runners in the recovery. We've been doing very well with our fishery management in all groups. I hate it that we have this infighting develop. When we look at, again, Maryland and Massachusetts, we need to look outside our borders. You know, it's part of the problem. I think the previous speaker touched on something that I don't know if there's two sources of opinion, but it's common knowledge that they are ocean migrants and that they do migrate, and that we have spawn and fish that go out in the ocean in the summer. The fish, waters are warm in Massachusetts are cool, but they're not that cool, so they do have a lot of mortality. They're killing a lot of fish in Maryland and Massachusetts, and neither state has done anything on the level that Virginia's done over the last 10 years. We continue to make sacrifices. We continue to fight amongst ourselves, and it's unfortunate. I've had a captain's license since 1994, in and out of the charter fishery, you know, aquaculture, whatever I can do to make a living on the water. You know, I've got a sympathy for, you know, all the diversity in Virginia's fisheries. And I think that we should all work together and have a little bit more tolerance of each other as we work through this problem. The fish don't last forever. The fishing we enjoyed in 2008, those fish were spawned in the late 80s, early 90s. We know that, okay? We don't last forever. I think in our lifetime we might see another 2008 era on rockfish, and I hope we get there. But to get there, we got to work together, and we got to not punish each other and penalize each other. I want to answer one question I think that Ms. Everett brought up about the ASMFC strategies. And the strategy they have is much less severe than what we're doing. I know there's influences. I'm not naive. I know there's influences on us to do a lot more. But if we wait and see and you look at the science, ASMFC has some decent science on this. They have a decent plan. The plan would not be nearly as draconian as we're trying to force on ourselves. I really appreciate the governor and I appreciate the commissioner on their willingness to be proactive and try to, you know, set the example. Unfortunately, we have set the example time and time again. We have taken overages from northern states and paid them back ourselves. I really wish that you let these charter and recreational fishermen have their fish over 36. I wish that you would look into and hope that you would look into some less impact on the commercial fishery, which I think is a very clean fishery. We catch our fish, we get off the water. You know, again, the infighting, it really would not help any of us. And that's something I would ask the audience to take into consideration, is that we should not be labeling and accusing each other. This problem is came from outside of our borders, and some of it came with inside of our borders. But we can work on something better here. And the ASMFC has a way. If we just listen to some of it, you know, we could probably do some things here today that are a lot less drastic. It was very difficult watching Maryland keep all those fish this spring when we took an emergency closure. That's very, very difficult. You know, I'm ashamed of Maryland. Maryland wants to talk about clean water and, oh, they're really mad at Pennsylvania for not doing its part. Well, Maryland didn't do their part. Yes, sir. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Dean?
afternoon, Commissioner.
Good afternoon, sir.
We, Jeff Deem, chairman of the FMAC committee. We held the meeting last week because in the previous meeting, we discussed the emergency action, and there were a lot of commercial fishermen, or not commercial, recreational fishermen, mostly charter boat captains, that said it would put them out of business to have just one fish. Nobody's going to hire a boat for $1,000 and come fishing for one day in one fish. So we tried to come up with something in between what the ASMFC proposed and what the emergency rule asked for. And I think the committee came up with a pretty good solution. Now, there's a couple things I need to straighten out. There's two reasons for us being in the situation we're in. One is release mortality, which is quite frankly disgusting in the recreational sector. The other is that in 2005 to 2010, we had very poor recruitment in this fishery. Those are the fish we've been fishing on. That's the stock that has declined. In 2012 and 2016, we had extremely high recruitment. Those are the fish that will be coming into the fishery now. So we have a little buffer there to work with that will help us get through a little bit less restriction than what we've posted so far. As far as viability, I used to believe that the older the fish was, the more eggs it had and the more viable they were. Lately, I've been involved with fisheries management for a long time. I had the honor of serving Virginia on the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council for two terms. And one of the things I learned that is the very oldest fish are like older females in our species. They're not always the most productive and the best eggs. So there's a little bit of something that needs to be cleared up there. I'm hoping that you can come up with a compromise that is somewhere between the ASMFC and the emergency rule that will keep these charter captains in particular in business. And as far as net sizes and commercial, I think we should wait till after the ASMFC says what we want to do. They're going to say either an 18% reduction like Virginia's recreational fishery has, or a 1.8% reduction. My personal opinion, although the committee doesn't exactly agree with me, is that we caused this problem. They're doing what they're supposed to do. They've been held to their decreased limit of a couple of years ago that was a 25% reduction that they now get no credit for. And I think to go after them for more isn't desired or isn't needed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else?
Moore. Good afternoon, members of the commission. Chris Moore, Chesapeake Bay Foundation. First, I just want to highlight, you know, the striped bass fishery is one of our most iconic fisheries in Chesapeake Bay. It's one, in addition, that the Chesapeake Bay provides about 70% of the spawned stock for the entire Atlantic coast. So not only is it an extremely important fishery to us here in Chesapeake Bay, but the reproduction within Chesapeake Bay is extremely important to the Coast Watch stock as well. And actions that you all are considering are going to have a huge impact biologically, both here in the Chesapeake Bay on all and all along the Atlantic coast as well. And I think what you all have been looking at in terms of trying to protect that spawning stock is what you should be doing and making sure we try to recover this fishery quickly. To make sure we do that, it's going to take bold action. As we saw back in the 80s, the striped bass stock responded well to management actions. We saw a very high biomass. What you all are trying to do now is make sure we get back to those. And it's going to take some bold action to do that. We know that. We saw the results of the stock assessment. But I hope as you're making your decision today, you'll continue to think about those bold actions you took in back in August. You'll take action that will make sure we start to restore this fishery quickly and that all those different sectors have a benefit from this fishery, whether it's recreational, charter boat, commercial, you name it, we'll see the fruits of that labor very quickly as well. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Who's next? Sir, good afternoon.
Sir.
Good afternoon.
My name is Calvin Atkins. I've been fishing on the Eastern Shores probably 23 years now. And a lot of what everybody has said today is what I want to say, so I'm going to leave it alone. There's only one thing that I've noticed through the years. I've caught a lot of fish, caught a lot of big fish. I couldn't tell you how many citations I've caught through the years. I've released some of them. I've kept some of them. But when I seen the fish here, there was bait here. And nobody's talked about bait being in the bay. All you hear on the radio when you're out there fishing, the 1 week that I take off to go rock fishing, I look forward to Thanksgiving, then rock fishing for a week. And I might catch one or two fish and I go back home and go hunting. But nobody's talked about the bait in the bay. The Menhaden boats, and I know y'all don't want to talk about this, are taking the bait away. A long time ago, I sat in the bay, watched the gannets fall on bait. Bam, bam, bam. Now you can't find bait, so I think your number's in the bay because the bait is not here. The bait, they're catching it off and taking it out of the bay. And I think doing something with that, you might see the numbers go up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. Who's next?
How you doing?
I'm fine, sir. How are you?
Captain Kenny Ryder back, Eastern Shore, Cape Charles, Virginia. I've been fishing these rockfish 15 years, running charters, seen the good, the bad of it. I'm all for trying to get this fishery restored. I fish from November the 15th till the end of December. For these rockfish, I only kill, harvest 30 to 40 of these fish a year probably. And we need to do something about that. But as charter captains, you know, the whole Eastern Shore runs on tourism, commercial industry, far as people coming there, tourism coming there to fish, the hotels, the charter boats, the gas stations, tackle shops, and all that. We don't need to do something drastic where these people are not going to come here and fish. We need to do something. I understand that. Maybe in the spring of the year, we don't fish for them. But to take these big fish away, that's what these people come here to spend their money for. And without that, the Eastern Shore, it doesn't thrive on these small fish. We don't have them. People's not going to come there. You know, and everybody's bought expensive boats, charter captains, recreational people buy expensive boats, spend money on the tackle, hotels, food, lodging, whatever. But the Eastern Shore is really hurting if you implement this small fish limit to us. You know, the catch and release. We need to do something. I don't know the answer to it, but we don't need to do a drastic measure where we're not going to get anybody to the Eastern Shore to fish in the months of November, December.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Could I finish my 3 minutes?
I'm sorry?
May I finish my 3 minutes? One more point. You do what's right.
I thought the 3 minutes was up when I looked over there. Was it or was it not?
The red light was on.
The red light was on.
Good enough.
Thank you. I thought it was. That's why. Yes, sir.
Well, I try to keep my eyes short and sweet. My name is Bill Tice, and I've been fishing since I could walk. And I turned 75 last month. Now, I look at the history. Y'all should know the history. When you close this fishery, I think it's been closed twice now, the fish came back. You continue to catch them, I don't care if you catch 5%, 3%, 2%, they'll never come back if you keep catching them. You're going to need to close this fishery for a year or 2 years to get it to come back. Because commercial or recreational, it'll come back. But if you keep catching them, they're not going to come back. And that's just the way I feel about it. And I, I've been here before. And if you look and remember the crab thing that y'all had, I'm not going to bring it up, other than when you close a lot of it, the crabs came back. Today, they're crawling the walls. That's the reason they're crawling the walls, because y'all stopped them. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Mr. Place? You weren't here, Kelly, when we opened up. It's a three-minute time limit set by the timer. You can look.
Oh, where is the time?
Right there beside you. Okay,
thanks,
red.
Thanks for telling me.
Yep, you got it.
Prepared for many years. My name is Kelly Place. I've been fishing for striped bass recreationally and or commercially for about 60 years. I'm 62 now. Chaired the Striped Bass Advisory Committee for the ASMFC for nearly 10 years and served as a legislative appointee proxy for a long time as well. I've read, I think, just about every single striped bass management plan, peer reviews, stock assessment, et cetera, over the last 30-some years. I'm real concerned about the proposed 7-inch mesh restriction, and I don't think that it was an emergency situation. We're all for proactive measures, but I think to do this proactively would mean that we haven't learned a really significant object lesson from proposals we've made to the ASMFC in the past. That being that proactive action is good, but prior to hoping or expecting to get conservation equivalency credit toward whatever our landings, whether it's commercial or recreational, we found out the hard way that ASMFC doesn't give credit for proactive measures, and because that commercial situation is not an emergency situation, I would recommend that we do all our due diligence and study, whether it's socioeconomic, scientific, or whatever, put that forward at the ASMFC meeting coming up at the end of October, the annual meeting, ask them to assess any kind of conservation equivalency that we're seeking then. Otherwise, I think tactically and strategically would be a mistake to just do it, put it on the table, then turn it down. Happened in 2012. The Bay jurisdictions took a 14% cut proactively, expecting we would get credit. We didn't. Other things we did in subsequent and previous years that we put on the table of great significance put Virginia at a disadvantage both recreationally and commercially to the other states, both temporally and spatially in regard to the harvest and the characterization of the harvest. So because the time limit is, I'll just keep my comments to that one particular measure. I would like to point out that you probably know that a lot of commercial fishermen have invested in a wide range of different mesh sizes for striped bass. And a hallmark of a healthy fishery like striped bass is, I think, the way that commercial, specifically Virginia's commercial, has been managed. It's been spread temporally and spatially, again, over a wide range of year classes. And because of the temporal space of it, almost the entire year, we don't have derby-style fisheries. It's reduced bycatch. The commercial fishery over the years has reduced the size of fish dramatically. Many things I could point to that the commercial fishery has done, much of it proactive, all of it desirable from the moment, the feeling of the day, whether from ASMFC or VMRC. And it's at the point where the commercial fishery has absolutely zero responsibility for the excess mortality of the coastal migrant stock or the spawning stock biomass, especially in comparison to the other states, both commercially and recreationally. Our underages over the years, I think in 1996 we may have had a couple of pounds overage. It was immediately deducted. So for over two decades, I believe, we've had an underage which serves as a buffer for other states and other sectors' overages. There's a lot more to be said on this, but I urge you not to make a hasty decision because, once again, it'll show that we hadn't learned the object lesson of not having proactive measures fully vetted by the ASMFC Technical Committee. And I'll leave it at that, but I do hope that you don't make a hasty decision on that, and there are a lot of other issues that should be discussed. I hope you have some more public hearings on those. Thank you,
Mr. Place. Anyone else? Thank you all for your comments. All well thought out, impactful, important. Now the matter is before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Ballard.
I have a few questions for staff. One relates to one of the gentlemen, I believe Mr. Bowden, gave us some statistics that 1% of the harvest came from fish greater than 36 inches. Do you know what statistic he was referring to and whether you agree with that or not?
So yeah, I do. So it really depends on what you're looking at. So I believe he's referring to MRIP, which actually provides a catch at length. And so when we look at 2017, which is our reference year, approximately 0.22% of fish harvested were greater than 36 inches from the total harvest. However, if you deviate from that year, let's say you look at 2018, it could be larger. It could be 5-6%. So that's what he's referring to when he says that 1%. I believe he's talking about the 2017 year.
Okay. Follow up.
And question number two again was related to the relationship between size of fish and spawning potential. And we had talked about it being exponential, but I believe the relationship being exponential, I believe the slide had said linear. And I just wanted some clarification on that.
Right. It is linear. There are multiple studies that show that the larger the fish, it's a linear relationship. I believe BIMS actually just came out with a publication that looked at 4 or 5 different studies. All showed a linear relationship. Larger females, more eggs.
Okay.
Follow up.
Final question, I promise. Help me understand the timing of where we are here, and we enacted one emergency amendment. This is a second that will cover the October season, and then there's a potential we'll be here in October again for further seasons.
So what will happen October 30th is ASMFC will make a decision on the approach. And what we're going to do from staff's perspective is come with a request next month saying that we're going to request a quota change. We don't know what that's going to be right now. We will know October 30th, and then it will be during the November public hearing that we'll address that. We'll also, I believe, next month be further addressing the minimum size limit date. So right now, the minimum size limit is 28 inches from March 26th to June 5th, June 15th commercially. Historically, we've had a March 16th to June 15th. It just goes to protect really the spawning stock during that month when they're really prevalent. And that's really what's on the table at this moment.
Mr. Zedrin.
Some of the people who spoke suggested that why don't we just close the season during the spawning period.
Right.
Why are we not doing that?
We looked at that right away. What MRIP suggests to us is that during the spawning season or the Chesapeake Bay spring season, it only accounts for approximately like 4% of savings. We just don't harvest a lot of fish during that time. So we're being held by ASMSC to achieve at least an 18 or 20% reduction. So cutting that season out alone will not achieve that. We're in Virginia, we're really heavily weighted towards November, December. 85% of our harvest occurs then. Making season adjustments, you'd have to take a lot of the season in the beginning, start it almost mid-November to the end of the season, or take all of December out. So this is more of a compromise to protect the spawning stock, meet ASMSC's requirements.
Mr. Tankard?
So culturally, I think one of the things you hear in some of the testimony from the shore is the larger fish on the eastern shore.
Correct.
And then it fits in, the season seems to be a Thanksgiving to Christmas.
Right, on these, yeah.
And so if we, in fact, took that kind of time frame and and use that as our fishing time.
Mm-hmm.
Will we have enough savings to give ourselves larger fish?
We would if you started it in mid-November, but I would be cautious about that because I don't think that's quite fair for everyone. You know, this Virginia does harvest a lot of fish on the Eastern Shore, but we're a lot more than just the Eastern Shore. There's people in the Northern Neck that fish up in the tributaries that primarily harvest fish in the beginning of the season. And so cutting them out is not really fair for everyone.
Mr. Ballard?
similarly, looking at the larger fish issue, which we talked about, was 1% of the harvest. There might be different statistical points or data sets, but then eliminating the spring season would be 4%, which I believe you were just implying wasn't a big enough savings measure really to warrant. But the thing that everybody seems to be most upset about is the 36-inch limit, which we're saying is only 1%. Is that a fair comparison, or are those two different percentages I'm talking about?
Right. Yeah, so, you know, when we put a maximum size limit in, it's for a few reasons. One is to protect that spawning stock. Again, as Mr. Moore alluded to, you know, 70%, this is one of the largest spawning areas coastwide. By removing those fish, we know for sure that those eggs will not make it that year. So I don't think it's fair to take away a season in the spring and allow, you know, the harvest of large fish as a compromise. I think we need to protect those large fish.
Further questions?
I have just a comment.
Dr. Neal?
Kind of part of, you know, we made this decision. We made this decision last month. And so all we're doing, this is what we decided. And now we're deciding whether we screwed up or not. So are we standing by what we did last month or not? And so that's kind of where we're at. That's my comment. So we already have the regulations. So when does this gillnet stuff take place? It already has. We did it last month. And so all these regulations are already on the books. And so now we're just deciding today whether we are going to keep what we did last month or not.
Yeah. Well, to that point, I'd like to mention a couple things that I think support why we're doing the right thing. Mr. Hughes made a comment about his attempt to go catch trophy fish. He spent 4 years trying to go up to on the Eastern Shore and was not able to catch one. Caught 2 in 6 years. That's a little disconcerting. The issue of infighting, there is no doubt that this is an issue that is not just commercial, not just recreational, it's both, and we're in it together. As far as the tourism aspect of it is concerned, I'm deeply, deeply sensitive to the economic benefit that this fishery provides. Then again, a lot of the stuff I do is anecdotal. I can remember former director of the, or assistant secretary of the Potomac River Fisheries Commission always arranged a charter for his kids and would take Commissioner Pruitt and I out. I don't recall what year it was, but it was seven, 8 years ago. We left out of Rudy Inlet and went to the Ramada Inn. By the time we got to the Ramada Inn, we left at 7:30, and by 9:15, we were on the way back to the dock with our limit, with two fish apiece. Went the next year, we fished all the way to Chesapeake Bay and back and caught one small fish we had to release. We can go around and around about how to solve the problem, but the problem is there. The other aspect of it is going back to Mr. Tice's comment pertaining to the crab issue. And I know you're crabs are crabs and fish is fish. One of the most difficult decisions that I had to do, I did as commissioner and pushed for and advocated for, was the elimination of the winter crab dredge fishery. And I made up my mind at that point, if it was going to work, it would be working in several years. And my fishery managers tell me that from a year class, yep, it may not be 3 years, but we've got to do something. Chris indicated to me that the mortality studies may not be 1 in 9 fish are lost. Maybe it's 2% that are lost. Well, that even tells me even more important that catch and releasing or get the maximum size for 36 inches is the right thing to do, because the mortality aspect is not as high as we think it is, and that fish is not going to die. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to do something. I believe we did the right thing before, and I urge the commission to vote the same way this time. Matters before the commission for action.
So I'll take JJ's spot. All meeting, you've done the same thing.
He had to go to a funeral.
Okay, well, that's a good reason. I move to accept staff recommendation.
Is there a second to the motion?
I have a comment. And
Mr. France?
Yeah, the main reason we're here, and we're talking about allowing to catch a big fish over 36 inches, the main thing we want to do is we want to preserve that diminished stock. And I think that's what we have to do until we can build our stock back. And I will second Mr. Neal's motion.
Motion made and seconded. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Opposed.
Mr. Ballard votes no. Motion carries 7-1. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for the comments.